from the Three Story Method Podcast Network.
This is the Serial Fiction Show.
I'm Christine Daigle.
And I'm JP Reinbush.
Welcome to the Writer's Serial Fiction Show.
If you haven't listened to today's story, we'd encourage you to pause and go listen to J.R. Fromling's episode on our companion podcast first. If you like what you hear, check out the full episode free on Vella. The links to the podcast and the Vella episode are in the show notes. So, Christine.
So, JP.
We are batch recording, so we don't have personal progress today because we just did that. But I have a question for our listeners. So, Vella is coming up on a year of being released, and I'm really curious how our Vella authors have been liking the program, have been disliking the program. I want to hear everything. Give me all the dirty details. That's what I want. I want to hear that.
Yeah, me too. I want your annual review of Vella, a year in retrospect. That sounds like a film. Yeah. Tell us about all your thoughts on your year in Vella and how it's been and what you're thinking of for the future. We'd love to hear about it.
Well, I mean, do you want to answer the question? I'll answer the question.
You answer it then.
Fine. You're like, I'm not going to answer it. I think overall, it's been a really nice program. I have really liked it. It is a really nice way to get authors who had that fear and or barrier to releasing products to get somewhere to release things. And yes, there are other platforms for it. But again, like, this is Amazon, Vella. Like, I'm sorry, it has a weight to it, regardless of if we want it to have it or not. And so I've just found personally that it has been really nice because I was able to publish something in the interim of the big publishing project that I've been working on. And I've seen readers from it. It's been nice. It's been dwindling out past couple of months, but it was nice seeing that. So overall, I'm happy I have my stuff in there, and I'm happy that I can put it in some other places as well. And yeah, that's my opinion.
Yeah, I feel the same way. You know, it was good for me to dip my toe into the indie world and see what that's about. And I learned a lot of things about my writing process, about marketing, about, you know, all of that in general, made a lot of great friends. So it's been a good experience, a lot of unexpected things. It's great to see readers. So I totally agree with everything you said. So yeah. Looking forward to hearing from other authors.
Yeah, I want to hear people. Tell me things. Tell me your everything.
Tell me it all. Tell all.
Tell me everything. Okay, let's go talk to our author.
Okay, so JP, let's talk about Pro Writing Aid. And as they say on their website, it is the secret to polished and professional writing. As writers, we make the same mistakes. When you use Pro Writing Aid, you can get clear, easy steps to improve your writing so you can share your ideas with confidence. Whether you're doing creative writing, business writing, academic writing, just composing an email and you want to sound smart, Pro Writing Aid will help you. And
100%.
There's something new. What is it, JP?
So Atticus, which is a wonderful program that includes book formatting, and it is developing aspects for writers so that it can basically be a one-stop shop for writers, has an integration with Pro Writing Aid now. So we've mentioned before that Pro Writing Aid has a lot of integrations with, you know, Google Docs and Microsoft Word, and now Atticus, which just makes that tool Atticus really shiny and nice for authors that are looking for a one-stop place. But it's just the fact that Pro Writing Aid can integrate with so many programs so that you're able to use this sort of last line defense before handing it off to someone. It just makes it so much easier. I love using Pro Writing Aid because then I don't have people that are editing it looking for simple mistakes that I can find using Pro Writing Aid that I can learn from. And instead, they're looking at the deeper content and they're able to notate that. So I just find Pro Writing Aid so nice. So I love it when I hear a new integration has happened.
Absolutely. Check out Pro Writing Aid. It will help you be a better writer. ProWritingAid.com. Use our discount code SERIAL20.
SERIAL20.
So JP, let's talk about Later Press. So Later Press is a platform built to help authors declare their independence. It lets authors create digital books and sell them directly to their readers through their own branded website. And there are new things coming to the platform every day in terms of discoverability and new features. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I put Nerds on Later Press, and it was a really easy and really fast process, which was pretty cool. And one of the cool things was you can put a collection, and then you can put your, we put Nerds in the collection so that ideally if we do any spinoffs or if we do any like season two or like specifying those pieces, you can put those books in the collection, which is really nice. And it's a really nice way of like hierarchical pieces to it, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And it basically gives you your own website. Ours is nrds.laterpress.com. And you just direct your readers straight there and they see Nerds. It doesn't get blocked by anything else. There are no ads in the way. There are nothing. It's just straight up Nerds content for your readers to get straight to reading, which is different than some other platforms, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And I did the same thing, although I uploaded all of my books to a collection just so I had one place, you know, to direct mm-hmm. readers. And so I have Molecule Thief, Dark is Away, and the Steampunk Emerald Key is up there. So it's one link. People can see all your books and you can order them whatever way you want, you know, or your serials. You can put serials up as well. And and you can do it on a subscription model or pay per book. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, which was a really cool.
Yeah,
the pricing thing was pretty cool. Figuring out either doing per book or some type of a subscription model just to kind of give your readers different abilities to support you. Because some people really like the, you know, it's basically like a Patreon, but you just get content to read.
And the cut is just 5%.
Yeah. So test it out. Try it out.
Yeah. Laterpress.com.
See you later, press.
So I wanted to start off by talking about your hook. So you have a grumpy old man chased by a magic storm using magic that he fears is going to draw the wrong kind of attention to himself. How do you go about starting your stories with a hook that will draw a reader in?
I don't think about it.
Perfect.
Okay, we're done. I'm a weird pantser with a plotter husband, and who I'm just like, wouldn't it be cool if? And he's like, okay. So then what happens? I'm like, well, I don't know. I haven't written it yet. So like, and then so what I decided is we could have rolled it back a little because I had written several chapters of him wooing each of the three, to Tanya, Mab, and Nim. And I was like, well, that's really not needed. And this makes it more of kind of a weird harem story. So I took it out and just alluded to the fact that he had wooed all three of them. And Mab and he conceived Morgan. So I decided we're going to start with Mab has figured out that he has been unfaithful. And that's kind of where the story starts. And he, you know, for whatever reason, he's discovered that when he uses magic, he gets in trouble. So it has to be related to that. And he's realizing things are going very sideways. So what I've artfully done, and I don't know if I've done it so well, is you don't actually know who the villain of these books are yet. You kind of think, okay, Mab's the crazy one, she's the bad guy, and then stuff happens to her. You think, why is Aesop in trouble? Who are these six characters? It's purposely written to be kind of like, what the heck is going on here? So that's
I love it.
Yeah.
So when Christina and I looked at this first episode in terms of armature or theme, we picked up on a couple and we use like kind of these statements. First one being that there's nothing more important than family, or it's worth risking danger to protect the ones you love. Specifically talking about when using magic, there's clearly some type of a danger when using it. I'm curious, do you utilize theme when you write episodes?
I do. It's kind of, so what happens is I'll just free write and then I'll go back and read it and be like, okay, that doesn't fit here. Let's save that for later. Okay, what am I really trying to say here? And so, yes, each episode gets themed, and the title of the episode usually is an indicator of the kind of theme you're going to run into. I like song lyrics, so I have to be very careful. I really like song lyrics. So there are so many words you can use that are considered not the official thing. But the gist of the episode will be in the title. So yes.
It's always a tough one not to use song lyrics. You're like, I don't want to get sued. So I put that out of there.
Or pay a lot of money.
One or the other. Get a cease and desist letter. Okay. So I'm curious about how the theme ties into your character development. So looking at your protagonist in this first episode, Papa Grimm or Papa Aesop, he really wants to be on time, but he has to keep his boys in line. So how do you go about crafting these characters?
So when I first thought about this, I thought, who better than to be the troublemakers than the Grimms themselves? You know, they're spoiled rich kids. They're the princes of Nod, basically. They can do anything. They can create entire worlds. They create a lot of chaos in those worlds. And so one of the things I really like about this is Aesop's no angel himself. He has created the mess that's all happening. So if you notice, he's just they're an apple from the tree kind of thing. And so I knew that much. I knew we were going to have the dad, and then we're going to have the boys, and they were all trouble. And you just kind of see that. And then Hans is the baby. He's like a teenager in comparison to the rest. And Lewis is missing because people think, you don't find this out till 4, but people think he's dead. So when I created the character profiles, I was like, I need them to be both the good guys and the bad guys, kind of, because they're the gods and gods don't care. Gods, you know, I say gods don't care. They have a detachment from their beings. So like everybody in the bar, so they'd be like, a wish? You're going to grant me a wish from a Grimm specifically, who are the most powerful beings in the world. Well, heck yeah, you're going to pay attention, you know? And my favorite moment of the episode is where he's going like this to make them all unwish, because he's doing it very pointedly and he doesn't have to. He can just think it and it happens. So when I develop a character, this kind of goes back to being a panster. I don't really write a character profile. And then I run in trouble later, like 10 chapters later, I'm like, what color eyes did I give them? You know, like, and I have to go back and reread. But I do make some bullet points of like, Grimm is stubborn, set in his ways. And he's always late because it's kind of a nod to the white rabbit there. I wanted him to have that sense of urgency, but he can move at the speed of thought. The dude can water walk. Okay. So like he can get anywhere he wants as fast as he wants. And it's kind of a, sort of a rat race reference. Cause you know, we set our own pace in the world and sometimes you get going and you're like, I just gotta go. And sometimes you're like, it'll take 10 minutes. So that's kind of where that goes. And then I also obviously have to move the story forward. So I have to give you pieces that Aesop doesn't grow as a character because he's not the main protagonist of the story. He's the catalyst of the story. So it's kind of a weird shift for Fall of Avalon because the story is really about Morgan and what happens with Nod with Morgan. But we have to have those first episodes with Aesop setting into motion why Morgan is where she is. So he's really the catalyst. So I'm allowed to not let him grow. He does grow as a character. You just don't know that till later when he's rescued. So
I love this because it's like you almost have your character have these markers that drive the plot. And when Christine and I looked at the the scene specifically, the tavern scene, when we broke down the three C's, the conflict, choice, and consequence, we came up with, you know, his son announcing he's going to grant this wish, and then good old Papa Grimm erasing the memories. That's his choice that he makes. And then we have the Silver City Patrol appearing, and they're drawn by his use of magic. So I'm curious, how do you construct scenes? I know that you are a pantser, but I'm still curious how you go about it.
So your laugh is, I will basically write like a caveman. Aesop enter, son grants wish, patrol shows up, Aesop undo. Basically, that's how it gets written. And then I hit those bullet points kind of thing. And then I put a lot of fluff words in because I'm a glue word person. I'm stuck at 46%. Anybody who uses ProWriting, I just ignore it. It's the only thing that I truly ignore, the glue words, because I base my stuff to match Nora Roberts, because I write a lot of romance, and she puts a crap ton in there. So I'm like, okay, she can do it, I can do it. But I also then, I do the dialogue second, because to me, dialogue is probably the second most important thing in the scene, other than making sure you get from A to B. I really then, the conversations that they're having, and I act out kind of, you know, like, do they sit up? Do they stand? Do they smile? Do they, you know, if you ever watch me write, my face does all the emotional actions of the characters. It's hilarious. Ben, my husband, laughs every time. But I have to do that. So especially fight scenes. I'm terrible at fight scenes. I have to act it out because I'm like, I don't understand what you just did. Physics doesn't work that way. And then when you have magic fights, physics doesn't matter. So like, and then I go through and kind of just touch it up. Okay, there were two guards here. Why did I only say one guard there? You know, kind of. And then Ben, when he edited that scene, the edited version isn't on vellum. I'm about to finish that and get it all put up there. But when he edited it, he took out one guard entirely. I'm like, no, there needs to be two. There was a reason for two, you know. So then that's kind of how it goes. And then once the scene is done, I kind of just listen to it. I let the speech text thing read it to me, and I go, okay, we're missing a word, or we're missing a whole point here where I didn't finish my thought. I'm really terrible about, I'll write half a sentence and then just like go on to the next sentence. And just, so.
Yeah. I've never had someone explain exactly what I do so well.
Yeah, I was like, I do a lot of that too. Except my husband doesn't laugh. He's like, what's wrong with you? Like, are you ill?
Mostly,
like, I'm
yes.
Like, no, I'm just being my character for a minute. Just leave me alone.
Yeah. Well, I make him. So what's really funny is the sword fight scene at the end of Fall of Avalon. I made Ben get out our foam Warhammer swords and fight it out with me. Like, so I could see what he was talking. Cause he described it to me like four times and he didn't like any of the ways I wrote it. And I was like, well, I'm not writing it. That's boy speak. Like, cause he wrote it in a very, his voice is very masculine and it's a very different tone. And he edited that scene. And then I was like, okay, that's not my voice at all. First of all, they're going to know I didn't write that. And second of all, no, that's not how this works. And so I made him fight it out with me. So he's a good sport about it.
Nice. So your series, you have Wonderlanders, Aesopies, Merlin, Grimms. What advice do you have for blending together different fairy tales or mythologies?
You have to be very careful to make sure it's all public domain, step one. So the Ozians, or Ozralians, as they are called, because the rest of the fairy tale world doesn't know what they're really called. Frank is their Grimm, Frank Elbaum. I was very sad I could not use Elphaba as her name, because that is McGuire's version. So fun fact about Wizard of Oz is the Wicked Witch of the West has no name. And that's why she has a different name in every version. And so mine is Delphine, with a play on the Oracle at Delphi. So it to be the first, public domain's careful. Second, you have to be true to the type of story. So Aesop's fables are all animal-based, kind of farmy, kind of this wholesome more thing. Grimm's fairy tales, Hans Christian Andersen, are very traditional princes and princesses, the Silver City, they're the high court, the one that everybody wants to be. I have to be very careful with the labyrinth because I wanted it to be Labyrinth, the movie Labyrinth, with the Goblin King and all that. And it's really more the Greek mythology labyrinth, with the guy running the labyrinth is the Goblin King. So, like, you have to kind of... And then Oz is kind of set in the 1920s, 1930s. So they've got the TikToks. They've got the more modern clothes and stuff. And Wonderland is an acid trip, so you can pretty much do whatever you want. my Wonderland is very loosely based off of Frank Bedore's Looking Glass Wars. It's my tattoo as well. I am the Queen of Hearts. My sister was supposed to get this tattoo and get the one with the diamond. She didn't do it. Chicken.
Rude.
But it's very based on that, because it's more of a grittier sort of Wonderland. And it's also, I'm not a fan of Tim Burton, so I really tried not to kind of get in that, but it's more, I kind of wanted more of the book stuff than what we've seen in the Disney cartoons or the most of the TV movies. There's a white queen and a red queen. And I did play with the card soldiers. They're humans, but they're like made of paper. So it's kind of like they're fairy tale creatures. So you can do what you want kind of thing. Everybody comes from Stardust. I don't know if that was a theme that you picked up on, but so when I decided to add Avalon and all of the Arthurian legend, it's not just Arthurian legend. So this will be explained a little more in the second book. And it got a very tiny taste of it at the end of Fall of Avalon, where Morgan and Arthur wake up and it's no longer their castle. It's all of Ireland, England, and Scotland got ripped into naught. The whole thing. Like, it disappeared from Earth for a very short time. So that's where we're at with that. So you kind of, I wanted to take, Ireland has a lot of history of fae and, you know, lore, that kind of stuff. And I wanted more of that than I did the Arthurian legend. So that's kind of... I've not ever read The Mists of Avalon, but it's got a lot of flavor of that too, once you get there, because I did like the TV series with Julia Margulies. So it's got a lot of that in there too. Yeah, so it's got influence from there. But you have to... So when we played the game, we also had Greek mythology, like it was its whole island, like a whole island of Greek mythology. But it got too convoluted in my head to add every single storybook thing. So I trimmed it down. And in my head, we've got Silver City, kind of the north center, the Aesop Nation in the center, Verona, which is all of Shakespeare's world, kind of off to the northeast, or, yeah, northwest, I lied, northwest. Oz is southwest, and then the labyrinth is southeast. And when Avalon gets ripped in, it's the northeast corner. So that's kind of how they all blend together. There will be a map. I plan to draw a map and do all that fun stuff, because in your head, you're like, wait, where do they go? And like Wonderland is nestled where like Aesop Nation's in the center, and Wonderland's just below it. And Nim's Garden. So Garden of Nim is a play on that cartoon from the... Mm-hmm. You know, so that's one of my, a lot of people picked that up and I was very happy. So I was like, yay. She created this lovely garden, which is now destroyed. And there's a forbidden forest, which is ominous and spooky kind of thing. So, and this also is a testament to Nod changes. Like it's perpetually, it's a magical land that changes as it needs to. So about the only thing that you aren't getting the truth from is Silver City. So, and like there's a whole island, Neverland Island is like Australia off in its own place. So, yeah,
I love it. So, you mentioned that you play a form of storytelling role play online where you write scenes at a fast pace. Do you have any sites that you recommend for people interested in this kind of storytelling and improving their improv skills?
Yes, there are two. One is mine. It's infinitybound.net. And you can find it if you go to my writing website. It's under the Inner Circle. And then the other one that's also listed there is called Astral Plane. They're not very busy anymore. They were really popular about 10 years ago. And if I sit down and log in and go play, it gets a little, you know, pickup. But generally, everybody's grown up and gotten busy and doing our own thing. And if I'm going to spend the time writing, I'd rather write my stuff now than... but every once in a while, I just want to cut loose and tell, like I told this really quirky vampire werewolf fight club story a couple weeks ago, like just randomly anything can happen. So it's great to, if you go, you can create a login. It's all free. You don't have to pay for anything. Infinity Bound is going through a redesign because I was a web developer once upon a time and I've got like half of it redesigned. So it's a, on really old code. It's like 20-year-old code. So I've been trying to modernize it to be a little easier on the eyes. But it's free. You can go in. You can make a picture for your character, create little tags for it. It's really kind of cool. And I use it to just relax. Like, if I get stuck on a scene, I'll just go and write something else. And it usually triggers my brain. So... if they want to go play on it, I'm happy to hop on and play with people. My husband's supposed to be making me a new version of that kind of site called sass.chat. He's 18 months in the making of that. So part of it is we've moved in our house and all that stuff. But it's really just kind of a place for us to kind of just cut loose and have fun. You know, no publishing stuff kind of thing.
Yeah. So I'm curious, you mentioned about your websites, and now you have a backgammon in video game programming and IT, if I'm not mistaken. Does that translate mm-hmm. into your author career in any way?
No. So it's funny, when I was in second grade, I wanted to be a lawyer when I grew up. Go figure. Probably because my mom really was like watching LA Law kind of thing, and I date myself there, early 80s. And then I got into college and I didn't like it. Like, as a history poli sci major, and I was like, this is for the birds. So I dropped out. Just dropped out, wandered the country, played on the internet, goofed off, met tons of people, met my now ex-husband. We were married for 13 years. And I got into tech support for digital music, which, funny stories there. Walmart.com's digital music, hilarious. I got three or four jobs like that where they wouldn't promote me or move me up into like QE or development because I didn't have a degree. So I went and got a degree. And at the time there was an associate's program in Texas where I lived that gave me the video game programming skills. And I applied for some internships. They were unpaid. And at the time I had to be a grown up and pay my bills. So I couldn't do that. So I then moved back to Indiana. And I got my bachelor's in programming. And I wanted to do front end, which is the part you see, the, you know, all the visual pieces. I'm really good at that. I've done that for 20 plus years. And most people now want full stack, which is the part you see and the part you don't see. And so I got the degree and I started working for a company called Cedia. And I've just all the entire time this has happened, I've been writing creatively. Just for fun in that gaming community. It's the same about 400 or 500 people for the last, oh gosh, since 1998. So like, that should give you some perspective as we all started together in 1998 and have grown up together. And I've always been writing. I have a play from fifth grade that I wrote still. It's really awful, but it's, it has glitter and everything. I have it in my adventure box. So when the pandemic hit, I picked back up that community writing because I'd taken about a 5-year time out because my ex-husband was real big in the community. And people are weird when you get divorced. Let me just say, he and I had a very amicable divorce. We're still really good friends. And the community went bananas. Like, just not in a good way. So I took a time out. And when I came back, people that really wanted to write with me wrote with me, and I was like, okay, I'm not getting what I need from writing with these people, so let me just write my own stories. And that's I've sort of transitioned to that, and now I have fun writing with those people. Don't get me wrong, but I kind of like writing the whole story more now.
Mm-hmm.
So
that, very nice.
Yeah.
Not to fully change gears here, but I am curious how you maintain all of this creatures and magic in this world. Do you have some type of story Bible or maybe a bestiary where you keep track of it all?
No.
Interesting.
So this is where I don't use Scrivener to its full potential. I have Scrivener. And I can see, oh, I could do this. I could make my life easier. I could, it's all in my head. I just kind of, and then I'm like, I know I wrote about this somewhere, and I'll like control F it. So my husband teases me relentlessly about this because he's like, if you just write it in the profile, you would know. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. So a good example of this is Nim's Garden. There were tree ents, animals with a capital A, regular animals, you know, pretty much, you know, the rats of Nim kind of lived in the garden, and all the animals from the universe that weren't Aesop came from there. Funny thing that we'll find out is the big bad wolf was created in Nim's garden to protect her from her sister, Mab. So that's to give you, so she doesn't create all the fluffy fun characters, she created a werewolf, you know. So and in my head, I kind of, since magic has no rules, it opens me up to be able to say, well, it's magic, you know. Or there's some kind of, like the Six, for example, they have some very limiting rules because they are essentially golems. So law, order, chaos, all of that, they're essentially golems. And so they have some limitations that regular Grimms don't have. And I don't want to spoil that because those come up later, but it's all in my head. I don't write it down. And sometimes I'm a notebook collector. So I lie when I say I don't write it down. I do, but good luck finding the notebook I put it in, because I'll write it in whatever notebook's the nearest one. And like right now, all the notebooks are in a box somewhere. There you go.
So as a final question, what would you say to someone looking to start a serial?
Just do it. So all those buddies of mine that I gamed with, they're like, oh, I could never write a novel. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you've written like 10 with me back and forth, the equivalent of. I'm like, you don't have to write a whole novel. Serial fiction isn't the whole book at once. You literally are writing an individual chapter at a time. You can do that. 1,500 words. That's like four posts, you know? And they're like, oh, and I'm like, and it's, your story can go wherever you want. There are no rules. I mean, sure, there's romance rules, happily ever after, tropes, whatever. I don't really follow that stuff. I should. That's probably why I don't do as well as I do in certain genres, but I write what makes you happy, what, you know, and just write. People try to edit as they go. And I killed my writing mojo, just killed it. I'd write a paragraph and then I'd fuss over five sentences for like 45 minutes. And I'm like, I can't do this. So when I write a chapter, I just write it and I don't do any of the editing till the end. So once I've finished with what I want to say for that episode, then edit it. I recommend paying for the tools. You know, it's expensive, but I bought Scrivener. I bought Atticus because I was going to try it and I didn't like Atticus. Because I had learned Scrivener by that point. I bought Pro Writing Aid. Subscription to Word or Office or whatever. And then I paid for Book Funnel. I pay for Story Origin. You know, those are promoting tools, but they still connect you. I pay Adobe for stock photos every month. So, because I do my own artwork on all the books. So I go and find the stock photos I want and then edit them to what I really want them to do. it's expensive up front. I probably dropped $3,000 to $5,000 in the first couple months just on all the tools and advertising. And yeah, my advertising budget was out of control. Right now I'm only doing Amazon ads, but even that, it's nothing because I don't pay them anything. Like, so I've dropped it all to like the $5 a day kind of thing. It doesn't win any bids because I set it so low, but the tools make a huge difference because like my writing process is I write the chapter, I listen to the chapter, fix whatever I hear is wrong. I then kick it over to Pro Writing Aid, follow all of its little, hey, this isn't okay, this isn't okay. Tell it, no, this really is a word, leave it alone. It does not like, I forget what it is, but it doesn't like certain words because in modern writing, it's too old school or too many, whatever. But I have a very certain tone. Fall of Avalon was really hard because it's meant to be old worldy. So it's meant to have that kind of fairy tale-y sound, and Pro Writing Aid hated it. Mm-hmm. It was like, no, this isn't modern enough. Cut out. I'm like, no, you don't understand. That's not how old-timey people speak. You know, like, so.
You gotta compare to Conan Doyle instead of Nora Roberts, I guess. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah. And then I kick it back into Scrivener to put it into Word, and then I run it through Word's editor as well, because they find different things. I also found that Google's editor will also find different things from the other two. That's too much for me. So, once that's happened, then I let Ben read it with my husband, and then he changes everything. So then we have to go through the process again, and then it gets posted up to Bella. You don't have to be that insane about it. But I do recommend Pro Writing Aid and Word both, and listening to it. That has been, because I'll just randomly leave out words. Mm-hmm. And you can't catch it when you're reading it because the way you read, you insert that word. So having that robotic read it to you, you're like, wait, that's not what? So that's been a lifesaver. But that's anybody can write. Whether you write well or not, who knows? You know, that's subjective. I will never tell somebody not to write. Because it's creativity, it's art. I mean, what I like may not be what you like, you know? And the only thing I do is like, I had one that she wanted me to read her stuff and she did not use any kind of grammar punctuation regarding speech. And it made it very hard to see when somebody was talking or thinking. And I said privately, I don't know if you're going for a style thing here or not, but typically, spoken out loud has quotes so that they know it's spoken out loud. And then she's like, oh, okay. I don't know if she changed or not, but I'm never going to be mean to anybody. And I always like to read stuff. I like to read, like my nephew, he wanted to play D&D. So we wrote a few things up and his character is hilarious. He's one of my favorite D&D players ever. And so I don't like to turn down creativity and I just tell people to go for it. You have to take the leap. It's scary, but if you don't ever take it, you're going to regret it. And like, get out of your own head, because I had to get out of mine. I have to get out of mine all the time to this day. I get a very woe is me. Nobody likes my stuff. And it happens pretty regularly. It's the goblins in my head. You just got to ignore them and do it. And that's my best piece of advice is, ignore the goblins.
That's very good advice.
I love it. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking with us.
This has been great fun.
Our thanks today to J.R. Froemling for letting us break down their episode.
And that's a wrap.
Popular, you're gonna be
popular.
Did you just have Wicked in your head? Oh, wait. it in my head now.
I didn't until you messaged me, and then I was like, okay, well, we'll do this.
You're welcome. Popular. Okay.
Popular. Gonna play with all the boys. I don't know if that's the lyrics, but I turned it into don't that. You
plays for all the boys. I don't know.